Okay. However, sir, again, would you state your full name and agency number for the record, please?
Brian Keith Brun, 090-160.
Okay, sir, you're appearing for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency this morning in reference to a parole hearing. I'm going to introduce the board members that will conduct a hearing at this time. We have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chairman, the Honorable Gail Rittenhouse, the Honorable Michael Johnson, the Honorable Ray Canales, and my name is David Neal, and I'll be the hearing lead this morning.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to go over some information, and as I go through it, if you hear something that you think is incorrect, let me know, and we'll discuss it. And once we go through the basic information, then it'll be time for some interaction between you and the board. This is your first time before the board, so we'll be wanting to get to know you and what's going on, okay?
All right.
All right, so you're currently, how old are you, sir?
58.
58, okay. Had a blank spot on my notes. Okay, so you're 58 years old and you're serving a 10-year sentence for attempted child molest, which began August 12th of 2014. Your sentence is due to probation revocation, which was due to numerous probation violations. There'll be some further explanation with the offense summary. So you will become parole eligible on August 12th of 2019. So that means that if the board were to decide to release you, you wouldn't be able to start that process until August of 2019. You understand that, sir?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You were certified for this hearing for whether parole, home arrest, or actual discharge on March 12th, 2019. And this is your first time before the board. So I'm going to go over some information about the offense now. This information is coming from the Maricopa County Attorney Office. They sent an opposition letter dated March 12, 2019. And their information came from the reports, the court proceedings, and the pre-sentence memorandum. So, so that you had an 11-year-old victim, which was your stepson.
Right.
And your stepson said that it started in the upstairs bathroom when you touched his penis and kissed him on the mouth. There were, over a period of time, there were quite a few instances of oral sex and those sort of things. When you were arrested, you did admit to molesting the victim and indicated your behavior had gone on sporadically for about 2 or 3 years.
Well, I turned myself. I went to a counselor and told him what I had done. I didn't get arrested for it. I mean, I got arrested for it, but I mean, it was because I came forward and said this is what I've been doing.
Okay, but yeah. So you admitted to the molestation.
Correct.
And you are sure of the reasons for your client, but did feel there were inaccuracies in the police report.
I'm sorry, what?
That you initially said there were inaccuracies in the police report. But during these interviews, you declined to elaborate on those. So, on April 3rd of 1991, you were charged with 4 counts of sexual conduct with a minor, class 2 felonies, and dangerous crimes against children. You took a plea, and on August 16th, 1991, you pled guilty to admitted count 1, child molest, class 2 felony, and dangerous crimes against children in the first degree. And amended count 2, attempted child molest, the class 3 felony, and dangerous crimes against children in the second degree. You were evaluated by several psychologists, and on May 23, 1991, Dr. Gray evaluated you. Dr. Gray found that, and this is a quote, the grooming and behavior of certainly included the power differential between step father and stepson and the dynamic of the relationship between the victim's natural mother and the offender. And that control was certainly exerted through the use of physical force. The reports are that that you physically abusive toward the victim. There were examples come from that evaluation and beatings with a belt while the victim was asleep and kicking him. Also, on at least one occasion, you purchased a video game for the victim as an inducement for oral sex, and on at least one occasion, offered him $1 to perform a sexual act. Dr. Grill also elaborated on your past victims in this. Well, it's not your first time you molested children. Apparently, in these evaluations that came out through your admissions between 1970 and 1979, you molested a young boy who was 11 or 12 years old with whom you were living. You used alcohol during the incidences. And there was sexual misconduct. It seems that, according to during these violations, you admitted to offending against both males and females. Another victim was a 10-year-old or 11-year-old girl. You said you approached her in the bedroom late at night while others were asleep.
No, that's what was alleged. I didn't say that.
Well, this is information that was taken from the psychological evaluations, and that information was by the indications here. The information was garnered from you by your admissions because they didn't even want investigating other crimes. It was all part of a psychological evaluation. When you say alleged, okay, I agree that that's a matter of semantics and then the court system is used to point towards somebody and say you allegedly did something and until you're tried and convicted or you plead guilty to it, it's all alleged. So, okay, but this is alleged because this is what you told the psychologists. There was a 14-year-old male. There were other allegations of sexual misconduct to include the molest of your stepdaughters and two children that you babysat. Dr. Ray opined that based on analysis of the collateral data presented in this report, it is his opinion that Brian Dunn's view, your behavior represents a continuing emotional propensity to commit sexually aberrant acts. So, in March of 1992, you were sentenced to 12 years on count one to be served in the Department of Corrections with lifetime probation for count two. You started your probation on March 6th of 2003. A probation violation report was filed by Buck Probation Officer J. Michael Hodge. It led that you had been compliant while you were granted interstate contact until you absconded from probation supervision in the state of California in 2013. And in December of 2013, you were transient and was placed on GPS monitoring. You failed to charge your GPS equipment and failed to report in the California probation officer as scheduled on December 17, 2013. You fled California and were eventually arrested in Wisconsin. The hearing was held. You were placed back on probation and then August of 2014. Another probation violation report was filed by adult probation officer J. Michael Hodge. You expressed a desire to have your probation transferred to the state of Wisconsin and efforts to get court approval were in progress when you again absconded from supervision. We would not know why you absconded at the time of the report. Your whereabouts were unknown. Another hearing was held November 18th, 2014, to address your noncompliance. You were sentenced, at that time, you were revoked and sentenced to serve the 10 years with a maximum end date of April 12th, 2021. So, I realize that a lot of the business about other acts other than you were convicted of were alleged. But it seems that you had problems adhering to your probation, and so that you ended up back in jail, and now that's what you're serving is the 10 years from the revocation, and that's what you're here for us to consider parole for. Correct?
Correct.
All right. As far as criminal history goes, it didn't seem that you had much, if anything, in trouble in Wisconsin on an interstate compact, which helped lead to the probation revocation. Also, during evaluations, psychological evaluations, and that's when you administered numerous other child molests and a continuing pattern of pedophilia. You've had no discipline since you were reincarcerated. You haven't had much programming.
Well, that's not offered. I've tried. It's on a priority ranking system, and I don't fit the priority ranking, I guess.
Well, aren't you on a sex offender yard?
Yes. Well, yeah, but I don't
know. They have STAEP available?
They have it. They have pretreatment, yeah.
Okay, but you haven't...
And I'm in that.
You're in there now?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I've been in that.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that's what I'm looking at there. You haven't met. At a whole lot of programming, we realize that some of y'all don't have a lot of different programming, but it's very important when somebody's in on sex offenders that they get involved in some sex offender programming.
Yeah, I'm in that now.
Okay, how far along are you with it, sir?
About halfway.
About halfway?
Yeah.
How long are you with
it? It's about a 4.5 month program.
Okay.
The one
that's
in right now.
TOEP?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's commendable. That's good. So, according to the Institution Progress Report, you don't have any plans in place for for a release plan, like where you would stay or how you would support yourself or anything?
Well, I need to get a job in a halfway house. I have no family here, no.
Okay, well, it's a good idea to, have a plan with very specific information before you look at release. But also, the Department of Corrections requires that you have on the books or somebody that will vouch for 2 months worth of living expenses. So too often it happens they put the inmates in halfway houses and then they can't pay the bill.
Well, then it's ridiculous because I don't have the other.
Pardon me?
I don't have the other option.
What do you mean somebody to vouch for you?
Correct.
Okay, well but there are groups out there that that work with inmates to get them ready to go back out into society, and then when they come out, they house them, they find work for them, and they usually, when they accept you, say, okay, you're going to be able to stay with us for the next 3 months, and we'll put in the work, and we'll do all that. And so you don't have to have family to have somebody vouch for your financial stability when you get out.
All right.
Let me ask you this. So there aren't any other probationers that you're responsible for when you're finished with the sentence, sir?
No.
Okay. But you have to will have to register as a sex offender.
Correct.
For the rest of your life. Okay.
But this, the sentence I'm doing now takes care of the probation.
Right. So, this is the first time that you're in front of the board, and so none of us have talked to you before. We only know what's in the paperwork here, and we'd like to get to know you. The inmate a little bit as we go through this. So, what I'd like for you to do is tell us what was going on that got you into this mess in the first place, and then since you've gotten further, what you've done to change so that you would be a good candidate for return to for the community.
And where are we talking from? My violation, you mean?
Well, we don't know anything about you other than what's in the paperwork. So, back in the days that you got in trouble, what was going on in your life that caused this or led to this?
I can't say exactly what caused it, but I can say that I was sitting at home one day and was tired of what was going on, didn't understand what was going on. Made an appointment with the counselor and went and told him exactly what had been going on in my life. And he had me call social services and I told them what was going on, and here I am. I mean, in a short version, I didn't want it to continue.
Well, were you, did you have a drug problem, alcohol problem?
No, neither. I had an abusive childhood, but I can't blame everything I've done on that,
I realize that, you can have severely abused as a child and make a choice not to do the same thing.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. I'm not blaming it on that,
Okay, but it also leads back to, and I do believe in, you play like you practice, so in other words, you were taught that behavior, it's really easy to continue the behavior.
That was my intent in the beginning when I came forward is I wanted it to stop because it wasn't just me, it was my father, my grandfather. It had happened before, And I was watching something on TV, John Bradshaw, something. And anyway, I just thought, I didn't know the extent of my punishment at the time, but it was, it's what it is, and I don't know what to say,
Okay, well, you say you were abused as a child. Were you sexually abused when you were growing up?
Somewhat, yeah.
Did the offenders ever get caught and
no, 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 no.
So
Dr. Shelby, when I was doing the counseling in 91, when I was in jail, had talked to him, and he had admitted some of it, but that was as far as the extent went. He didn't get in trouble or anything.
Okay. Well, that's, a lot of times, basically, you didn't reveal until you went in to talk about yourself.
Okay. Oh, yeah, it's been years, yeah.
Yeah, well, we can make a difference, and depending on the circumstance, it can make a difference and have a county attorney will deal with it. So what were you doing for a living back in those days?
I worked in just a factory. I made fiberglass.
You made the chemicals for people to use to do fiberglass work, or you made?
No, I made the fiberglass itself.
Okay, well, that's what I mean. You made the supplies that go out to the boat shops or wherever that they're.
Right, yes.
Once you did your first sentence and went out on probation, why were you having so much problems abiding by your terms of release, especially
with I wasn't for the first 12 years. I didn't have one write up for 12 years. that was towards the end.
Well, yeah, right.
I mean, if you look at my record, there's not absolutely anything to do with anything until my first violation. I was doing fine.
So what made you change your behavior? Why did you decide to abstain?
I just, my health, a lot of things came into play all at one time. Relationship, my health. It was a bad choice.
They gave you several chances too, and you kept kept violating there, but are you sure you didn't do it on purpose so that you could get the sentence over with and not have to have the lifetime probation? We see that as a pattern with a lot of offenders that get lifetime probation.
Right. No, because I could have applied to get off. You know, I know that that's not, lifetime's not lifetime, but yeah, I understand what you're saying. I was just having a lot of issues at the time, and unfortunately I can't go back and change them. None of us can, and there's really nothing I can say to justify it.
Good, sir.
You know what I mean? I'm not trying to make excuses, but it's what it was, you know.
Right. So if the board should vote to release you earlier, whether you finish your sentence, when you're released, and you go back in the community, what are your plans? What do you plan to do?
To get my life back in order and get my job back and do what I need to do to stay out of here. I was taking counseling before I got arrested. I paid it for it myself. It wasn't through the state. It was a profession, you know, on the side. Which helped me quite a bit. But like I said, one incident is that I can't take back, you know, but I took off. I can't say I didn't, you know. And
well, you said get your job back at the fiberglass factory?
No, I was delivering. I had my own business that I had clients for.
Oh, okay.
When my offenses happened, I was in fiberglass.
I see.
After that, I had my own delivery business.
It's amazing how much stuff has to be delivered around.
Yeah.
So it'd be a matter of finding something to fill in until you can get your client base back?
Correct.
Okay. And you plan on continuing with counseling and psychological help?
Counseling what?
Psychological counseling to help prevent and hopefully never offend again?
Oh, yeah. That's right. I've been here. It's just the one class that I've been taking right now. I mean, I've taken a couple other small classes that were for other stuff.
Right.
But as far as the SOETP goes, the class I'm in is the only one they offer here.
Okay.
But I'm currently, like I said, I'm currently in that. And I should be out. I should can have that finished in like the next 3 months, I think it is.
Okay. I have a question on my mind, just for, okay. Right, I'm going to go ahead and see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time.
Okay.
Ms. Rittenhouse?
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Brown, I would like to ask you about, you have one ticket for Department of Corrections that's a major, and it's for drug possession and manufacturing. What was that about?
That was like in, 2000, I think, or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, December 13th, 2000.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you. I mean, I could tell you, but it doesn't make sense to me because I don't have that issue. Somebody else that went in asked me if mine was good, and I said yes. And when I came back, and the next day, his was good and mine was bad. So I couldn't tell you, sir.
Okay. His what? I don't understand. Tell us what happened.
When I was going for my UA.
Okay.
It was a dirty urinalysis. And when they called me up there, I was going in, and the guy asked me how I did, and I said, well, I'm clean, you know, I'm not worried about it. And he wasn't. But then the next day, a couple of days later, it was the exact opposite. So I don't know. I couldn't tell you what happened.
Did you appeal?
But I don't have a drug issue. I've never had a drug issue.
Did you appeal that? Because there is an appeal process.
No, you can't. No, not in here. You can't really do that.
Well, yes, I
then
can.
I would have to say what happened, and I wasn't going to do that.
All right.
I don't know how to. You can't just say something like that and then not have a repercussion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Neal.
You know, but like I said, there's no. I don't have a drug issue. Never have.
Okay, Mr. Kamonis.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Braun?
Yes?
I just have a couple of questions just to understand. Earlier, you stated that when you went to a counselor, it was because you were tired of what was going on.
What I had done, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you meant the pattern in your life reaching back to other points of abuse or specifically what was going on with your life and your sexual activity with minors.
Well, yes, correct. That's what I didn't want having happen. I was frustrated. I was trying to stop that, and I didn't know how. I couldn't do that myself. I knew that, so I went and asked for help.
Okay, sir. I'm only asking this question based on the tone of your dialogue, but do you feel that you were somehow victimized by the criminal justice system during this case?
No. No. I think it's a little harsh, but I don't think I was victimized, no.
And you filed an appeal as recently as 2017, is that correct?
Yes, for the aggravated mitigated hearing, yeah.
Which was certainly your right.
Not for the case itself, no. No, I'm not sure. No, not for the case, for how it was adjudicated.
And what was
there's a big difference. I mean, I'm not, whether I'm saying I'm guilty or not, I'm guilty. I'm not saying I'm not. It was to do with the mitigation and the aggravation.
Okay.
Of the judge that dealt with the violation.
Thank you, Mr. Brunson. Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Mr. Brunson? Dr. Wright?
Well, just one quick question, and you might have asked it this one, sir, but as you indicated on your progress report and as you indicated to Honorable Mr. Neal, is that you have no plans in place at this time to resign. So why don't you decide at some point that you're going to resign? We just couldn't put you out on the street, sir. You know, that's something that, especially if you're a criminal record, so when are you going to decide where, if you were released, when are you going to make a decision where you're going to live, sir?
As soon as possible. I'm trying to find halfway houses now.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, that's good.
Right. I was just told 3 weeks ago about this appointment.
Yeah,
I haven't had a chance. I haven't had a chance, opportunity to do it yet. I'm doing it now.
Okay. So, well, good luck. That just caught my attention that you said that you didn't have a place. And usually,
that's true. That's correct.
I appreciate your honesty, sir. I prefer you being honest rather than you saying, well, I have somewhere and then you don't. And then we
I don't.
And then we let you out and then you have to still stay in for another year. You know, that has happened a few times with us. That's why I'm conscious of that. Okay. Thank you so much,
all
sir.
Right.
I want to ask another question back about your appeal. You say you were appealing the mitigation?
Correct. Well,
I know it's mitigation aggravation, you know, as in terms
right.
of the length of it, but 10 years is presumptive for the offense, and with everything that was dismissed and the lowering of the charges to attempt and you know, with a probation and no jail time for the second one, it seems to me that it was extremely mitigated.
Well, the what I'm saying, what my assumption was, the first charge, the committed offense, or the completed in 91,
uh-huh.
was mitigated. I was mitigated down to 12 on the first count on a completed offense, and I get the presumptive on an attempted offense.
Okay.
That's what my
my
thinking was.
But that the probation was a very, very, but the very light sentence versus 10 years in prison.
Correct. And I did 12 of those.
Okay, yeah. I was trying to, I couldn't quite get my mind around.
I'm sorry. Well, yeah, well,
I'm looking at you wrong. I'm not saying you don't have the right to do it, but I'm not saying that you did anything wrong by the appeal. I was just trying to get my mind wrapped around what you had said.
Just what the judge had said. It had nothing to do with whether I was guilty or not guilty. It had to do with
I realize that. It was just a matter of,
okay,
of sentencing, because, you know, we have a mitigation aggravation hearing, and, you know, this is aggravating circumstances, this is mitigating circumstances.
Correct.
And the appeal court looks at that and sees whether they feel that truly a mitigating or an aggravating circumstance, and, you know, I understand
right.
that process. I just was trying, because there was quite a bit of other things that were, you know, dismissed or...
Right, no, I understand that.
Everything else. Okay. All right, so we're nearing the end of your hearing. The board will be going into discussion shortly to make a determination. But before we do, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. If there's anything else you'd like to tell the board, now would be the time to do it. Once you've made your final statement, we'll go into discussion to make a determination. So now's your opportunity, sir.
I really don't know what to say. I've never been great at speaking, but, you know, I would like to get out on some kind of parole to get some type of assistance, and rather than just release. So, that's really much all I have to say, you know.
Okay, well, thank you, sir. The board's going to be going into discussion to make a determination. We'll be discussing the case amongst ourselves. You may think we're addressing you, but we won't be. But stay on the phone. Just remain silent.
Right.
And once we get a determination, I'll get back with you. Okay, sir?
All right, thank you.
All right, the board's now in discussion. So Mr. Brown is an interesting individual. This case is very tragic, and again, anytime this type of situation comes up, it's tragic to hear about any kind of child abuse. And it's also tragic to hear that Mr. Burn was abused when he was a child. It's unfortunately, there's a pattern that persists in this country, and a lot of it is the choices people make. Regardless of the way they're treated, but with the reasons for the probation revocation, the pattern there went a long time and did real well, and then didn't seem to keep in touch with these parole officers, and they bring up staffing, have hearings, and give them another chance, and finally got revoked, but now he's in there, he's asking for an early release, which is the one he's telling me. But as Dr. Wright said, there's no plans whatsoever for release as far as placement. He said he's going to try to reestablish his business, but in the meantime, he's got to have some means of support. He was applying to some halfway houses, but there's no indication that anybody was accepting him. And some halfway houses are pay as you go, others, the faith-based ones, are primarily if they accept the NGO program. They support you until they get you in a position they feel you can go back out into society and earn your own living. But without a release plan, and I don't really hear a lot of conviction in ownership of the offenses here, but I don't feel that this time Mr. Brown's a good candidate for any type of release, but I'm willing to listen to discussion from him and my fellow board member.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I think just because Mr. Brown chose to violate his previous community supervision, that indicates that he's not a good candidate for any sort of community supervision. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson? Okay. So at this time, based on all the information that we gathered here in this hearing, in regards to Brian Brown, ADC number 090160, I'm going to make a motion to deny unrest or absolute discharge at this time.
Second.
And because of the date of the time, I'm going to ask for one year set on.
It's all second.
Agreed. The reasons for the denial is it's a serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, owed to the victim, multiple victims, victim harassment, and because this is a probation revocation, violated previous probation parole. Okay, Mr. Brown, you heard the discussion and the vote, and the reasons for denial. So, do you understand the reasons and everything?
Well, I heard them, yeah.
Okay, that's what I mean, I understand. You certified by Department of Corrections in approximately 1 year for another hearing. And hopefully by that time you'll have completed SDAEP and have put together a release plan. And we do wish you the best of luck. And it seems that you are doing a good job, continuing down that line of more discipline. And hopefully you can stay out of trouble and make some more progress. Okay, sir?
Thank you.
All right, will you please put the CSA back on the phone?
All right.